Hello, everyone. Thank you for coming to my talk. My name is Eve Peters. It's pronounced Eve like Adam and Eve, except I'm a dude. I'm a graphic designer and I write about typography. And I'm here today to talk to you about movie posters and graphic design, and specifically typography on movie posters. My Twitter handle is bold condensed, and the hashtag for this presentation is Trajan. Now, in typography, one area that interests me very much is the selection of type. I'm always very intrigued why certain people select specific typefaces, why they want this typeface and not another one to express some atmosphere, some feeling, some historical context. And that is because beyond the words that they spell, typefaces talk to us in a subliminal language that we can understand culturally. For example, I can show you a word or two words that say exactly the opposite of what the typeface tells us. So we have these codes, this language that's embedded in our culture. And you also have this one. People have seen Despicable Me, know what I'm talking about. So, movie posters. We all know movies, we see movies, but also we don't realize that we also recognize some aspects of these movie posters that we know those movies with. For example, if I show you this, many people will recognize one or more of the letters that are shown in these fragments. And they will recognize Schindler's List for the S, Jurassic Park, and so on and so on. So the shape of the letters will be recognized by us, and they are part of the identity of the movie. We can recognize them also in the video shops and in the movie theaters. So I was formerly a graphic designer. In 2008, I was invited by Fontshop, which is an international reseller of digital type, to write for their blog. I started originally on the Belgian blog because I'm from Belgium. That's why my accent is sometimes a little funny. And when looking for interesting material to write about on typography, one of the first things that crossed my mind was make a connection between pop culture and typography, because everybody knows albums, everybody knows movies, every reads books and reads magazines, so it's always fun to make a connection and tell more about the typefaces that are used on these expressions of pop culture that we all know and love. So I started with critiquing movie posters on the Belgian blog, and then 2008 on the font feed. So I look at movie posters, I dissect the graphic design, but also specifically look at which typefaces were used, and more specifically why they were used. And doing this, of course, I got more familiar with this weird world of movie poster design, because there are some rules that happen there. There's many aspects that I discovered. For example, like alternate posters. These have done the rounds of the internet a year ago, specifically for Black Swan. There was this UK design agency which designed these alternate posters, and you see that it is a fascinating subject. It's a fascinating material to work with. So here we have four Art Deco inspired posters, and you see that both the design and the typography squarely reference to a certain period in time. You also have people from outside the field that work in movie poster design occasionally. For example, this is Chris Ware, one of the greatest comic book artists alive, who did these two movie posters. And there's other people that really play with the concept, well, with the medium. One of the better known people in that field is Olly Moss, who reimagined classic movies with the 8 films in Black and Red project. So what Olly Moss did was he looked at the subject matter of the movie, sometimes also at the original movie poster, and did some really innovative work with it. For example, here for The Great Dictator, the common element in Charlie Chaplin's face and Hitler's face is the little mustache. So he designed a poster that you can switch. you can flip it upside down and have the both aspects of the movie. For Rain Man, he went on another way. He just selected one of the key scenes of the movie. Everybody who's seen the movie knows what it is about, and just turned it into movie posters. So this shows that movie poster design is also, it's just more than advertising movies. It can also be a playground for graphic designers. Another one is the I Can Read Movies series, where classic movies are reinterpreted as if they were covers of classic novelizations. For example, here, Labyrinth gets this very 60s design, and both the design and the typography reference really clearly to 60s. It's by Mitch and Sarah, who also calls themselves Basic. One of the ones I prefer in his series is the one for Highlander. Again, if you have seen the movie, you know what this is all about. Another one is Victor Hertz. Victor Hertz is a German guy who did a whole series of movie posters reimagined with only the international icons, which were originally designed for the 1972 Munich Olympics and who has become really recognizable. So, for example, Jaws become a public swimming pool terrorized by giant goldfish. And I also really like his reimagination of Psycho, where he combines three icons into this. Now, looking at movie posters and discovering more and more, because every month I look at all the posters that have been released, so I see a lot of them, I started noticing also certain trends and certain similarities. For example, when you look at this poster for the latest Rambo movie, and then you compare it to the Robin Hood movie with Russell Crowe, you cannot but notice that there are quite striking similarities. Here as well, this is Tony Scott's Unstoppable. And then a previous movie of Tony Scott uses the same graphic devices, the same saturated colors, the same type in the middle in white, the blur and everything. And after a while, you get a sense of déjà vu. That's also a Tony Scott movie, by the way. So he's got, I think he's got four or five movies who use the same type of movie posters. Now, this can be intentional, sometimes unintentional, but sometimes the similarities are more than striking. For example, here, Night at the Museum, and then Zookeeper. And you can see all the elements are there. It's the golden background, the light from behind, the uniform, the animals, and there the music, the museum pieces hiding behind the pillars. So it becomes very striking that these posters can be really similar. Of course, there are certain movie makers that use it as a comedic device. And one of the best examples is Tyler Perry, who for his Madea movies, every time he releases one of these movies, he also makes these alternate posters where he spoofs well-known movies that are out at around the same time. For example, for the King's Speech, he made the Queen's Speech for Madea's Big Happy Family. And there's also for the Black Swan, which we just saw, he made the real Black Swan. And then for True Grit, he went for a breakfast-inspired True Grits. Now, these are funny, but there is something missing. What I think is missing here is that there is no direct relation between the Tyler Perry movie and the material he's spoofing. And for example, what I really like about the recent Muppet movie is that they did a much better job at finding links to other movies. For example, the Green Lantern movie poster was reimagined for a spoof poster because there is, of course, this song, It's Not Easy Being Green, and Kermit is green. So there's more link. The humor is a little more subtle. Same thing for the Captain America poster with Sam Deagle. So these are the things that are really fun to discover. And this, of course, a thing that most people will recognize. I don't know if I dare to ask audience participation, but somebody can tell me which movie this spoofs. Godfather. Unforgiven. But what happens is that at some point, a couple of months ago, I discovered a blog of Christophe Courtois. And Christophe Courtois is a film distributor. And he also has this blog where he examines movie posters, and he notices certain themes that appear to be a certain shared language in movie poster design. Because when you see these two, you can go much further. And you can find like literally dozens of movie posters that use the same language. And here, of course, I discussed with him over email. We have this interesting, like, different viewpoints. Me, as a graphic designer, I look for originality. I look for new ideas. Whereas he, as a film distributor, he firmly believes that movie posters use a very specific language. And that language is used to more effectively reach the audience. So the audience should always be able to decipher a movie poster subconsciously and know, is this kind of movie the movie I want to see? So here are all those action movies with the menacing back and then often with a weapon in the hand. Even more menacing, often for horror movies, is like the big eye staring at you. Then there's action movies, which are often completely black and white with a streak of fire. It's also very interesting how Nick Cave performs surgery on his shoulder, because I don't know where his hand goes, but it's a bit weird. And here the conspiracy movies, where people are running away from somewhere, often through narrow pathways. I don't know if this... some subliminal message there. But more than speaking to us with visual language, there's also purely typographical, a language that also can tell us what kind of movie we can expect. Now, I've written down these words in a very specific style. There is no reference to whatever movie or whatever director, and still, I suppose that most of you already know what kind of movie this is for. Somebody wants to take a guess? Comedies, indeed. And why do you know this? Because you have seen it before. And before. And before. So there are literally dozens of these posters use that same device, the big red text. There's even a spoof video online that enumerates all these movies that use those big red typefaces. Now, I often get on the case of these communication agencies and the producers for always taking the same approach and always using the same devices, but I have to give them credit when they realized after a while that the audience may be onto them and had understood that they were using this big red text device. They got really creative and they decided to change their movie posters to big blue text. Right, I put the Smurfs in there. I know that's cheating a bit, but I guess you know what I mean. And so if I just show you typefaces, you will already know in what direction you have to look for what type of movie it is. For example, this is more like action-oriented, sometimes military. These are a different type of action movies, often with car haste and everything, like people, yeah, indeed. And again, it's because you've seen them so many times that you didn't really notice when you watched the movie poster, but the whole language is ingrained in your subconscious because you've been exposed to it so often. This is, of course, the romantic comedies, who have actually a very specific poster design. And what I'm going to show you next will be a bit difficult to decipher because the specific poster design makes it difficult to find out where one poster ends and where the next one starts. Because they're all the vertical bands with then in the bottom and the top different faces. That's all the same type. Well, it's not the same typeface, but the same style of typeface. And then the romantic comedies, of course, you got other ones as well. This typically, the movies where in the beginning people don't get along, and in the end they do get along. So you also know very well what to expect with these movies. The next one is really false advertising, because you may be going in expecting lots of sex and everything, but yeah, people lying in the beds often like lots of talking and no sex at all, so it's like very disappointing when you go watch those movies. But again, you see there's a pattern. You see that these are the typical images that draw in certain specific crowds for specific movies. This, for example, is then the more historic romantic things, Jane Eyre and so on, Jane Austen. And you would think that the independent movies would escape this kind of stereotyping, but unfortunately they have their own language as well, which is the hand-drawn type. And it's even worse because they also have this very specific color scheme that they use, being yellow. Now, there's one typeface that escapes all these classifications, which just crosses all boundaries, and that's Trajan. Trajan. And this is the typeface that we're going to look at in this pretty short time. All right. So I call my talk The Rise and Fall of the Roman Empire, but it was too many characters, so I had to switch it for the program. So there is this whole thing going on, and it is literally what somebody told me is like a graphic designer working for one of these communication agencies was literally told, make it Oscar material. Now, I've tried to interview some agencies that typically do all these movie posters, and this is kind of some omerta. I don't know if I pronounce it right, you know, like in the mafia, that you're not allowed to talk about it because everybody declines to comment on it. I've asked, like, are you specifically asked to use this typeface? Are there certain restrictions or whatever? And everybody declines to say anything. So I've got only this one testimony of a graphic designer, and that's all I can go with. So I can't tell you that much about it. Now, let's first look at Trajan. What is a typeface? In 1984, the Apple Macintosh was launched, which was a revolutionary. One of the revolutions was that it had different typefaces. So in the beginning of 1984 to 1990, there was this rush of all the established foundries that wanted to have their typefaces on this new machine for graphic designers to work with. And you see all these classic typefaces like Times and Helvetica and so on that are being converted. But there were also other companies who realized that there was real potential. And one of them was Adobe, because they did graphic design software. They thought, why not also have our own typefaces? So in 1989, the type department was founded. Heading it was Summer Stone. That's now of one of the icons of type design. And he hired Carol Twombly and Robert Slembeck. Oops, sorry. No, and in the first selection of typefaces that were released on the Adobe Originals, I think most of you, if you're graphic designers, will recognize them. These are the classics. One of them was Trajan, but then also the Adobe Garamond and the whole Wild West selection at the bottom. Lithos for the Greek stuff. And so Trajan, where does it come from? Its source material is the Trajan Column in Rome. It was erected to commemorate the victory of Emperor Trajan in the Dacian Wars, and it was completed in 113 CE. And so the whole column shows this relief, this whole war, but at the bottom there's this type that was is actually hand-carved lettering, which serves a bit as the blueprint for our capital letters. And it's very elegant. It looks really nice, the proportions and everything. And so the people at Adobe wanted to digitize it. And what I did there is like I took literally the picture and then underneath did it with digital type. And you see it's really very close. It's very faithful. And it was designed by Carol Twombly. Carol Twombly was is a bit special person in type design because she came to the Rhode Island School of Design wanting to be... pottery. She wanted to do pottery and basket weaving and stuff like that. But somehow she got into graphic design, got picked up by Chris Bigelow and Chris Holmes, which are Chuck Bigelow, which are type designers, and were she was hired by them to start on type design, and she was immediately quite successful because she won in the first Morizawa competition and also received the Charles Pignot Award. That's an award for type designers under 30 as some kind of encouragement. But then she left type design completely in 1997. So this person has completely, she even has barely email or whatever. So we have this one picture, and now she lives somewhere, I don't know, I imagine somewhere in the woods, very idyllic, but she's completely gone from the landscape, although she did a couple of really classic typefaces and were really beautiful. So there is this thing, I don't know if any of you have seen it, but there is a little movie, a video clip on the internet that went around like I think 2 years ago, which says Trajan is a movie typeface, and everybody just accepts the fact that Trajan is the movie typeface. But what irks me in these things is that often I have the impression that there is one person who doesn't necessarily know what he or she is talking about, who says it convincingly enough, and everybody accepts this fact as truth, but nobody ever thought of researching this. So I announced on Twitter immediately, everyone, yeah, do it, because I didn't know why they were so enthusiastic. I will tell you immediately why they were so enthusiastic, that I was going to research it and they didn't have to do it. Now, this research is only it's only semi-scientific for a very good reason. Actually, three reasons. That's Rosa Lux, my one band. That's Trouble Man, my other band. And that's my family. So I do have a life, so I did some research, but I mean, I have other things to do as well. But I did the effort. So to look the usage, to research the usage of typeface, it's very important to know when we have to start. And of course, with this typeface, it's very easy. It was designed, it's original, so it's not based on anything else. So in 1989, it was released. So that's actually the very first day that one could use it and access it. The second thing I need to know is, where do I source my material for the movie posters? Now, there is no international institution for the movie posters. So there is no database which has all the movie posters ever designed. So I have to get my data somewhere. And my first thought was looking it up on IMDb. Problem is with IMDb is that they only show one poster, and it's buried already one click in. So I have this poster, and often I do not know if this is the original poster or not, because old movies are often shown with their DVD cover, so the data is tainted, so I can't really use it. My second thought was to look for it on the IMP Awards, the Internet Movie Poster Awards website. This is specifically about movie posters, so my odds were much better to find more complete data. The one problem, of course, is that it's a user-defined database. So it just relies on people sending in movie posters. And it's not even the communication agencies or graphic designers who design the movie posters, but more the users that find them online and just, yeah, they collect it. It's like this kind of hobby that they have. So, but this was my best bet because I couldn't find any better source. So unfortunately, I'm not a programmer, so I don't know how to scrape information from websites. So I had to go about it the old-fashioned way. And now I understood why people were so enthusiastic, why I wanted to do the research and they didn't have to do it. You see, at the upper right corner, you can look for per year. So you can select a year, and then you get an alphabetical list of movie posters. And then you get this. These are thumbnails that are 69 pixels on 110 pixels, which is really small. And then you have to look like page after page of these. There's 21 like thumbnails on one page. And then try to see on this very small size if this is Trajan. Now, fortunately, I have this genetic defect that I can recognize most typefaces on sight. So all I had to do was look at it and try to guess, is it Trajan or not? For example, this was the first usage that I found 1991, which is kind of logical. I mean, Typeface needs to be released on the market, and then it has to gather some like momentum. People have to start using it. So 2 years in, it's possible. So I accepted this as the first usage. Unfortunately, there are other typefaces that look a lot like Trajan. For example, these are two posters that I had to actually click on it, wait for them to open, and see, oh no, it's not that. So it was quite a bit of work to start researching this. So 1991, first usage. There I had to go through 14 pages, in total 289 thumbnails. Click, 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 click. By 2009, there were 75 pages with posters. More than 1,500 thumbnails I had to look through. So for the two decades, we have 774 pages. I looked at 16,000 thumbnails while watching television over the edge of my screen. So now I understood why everybody was so happy I wanted to do this and they didn't have to. There was a problem, though, because there were so many posters, I had to like set a certain rules for myself. I wanted to find out how many designers had consciously selected that one typeface and not another one. So I wanted Trajan only to be used on the original poster. Let me explain. For example, this is the poster for The Fifth Element. It has Trajan. However, this is originally a French movie. And the French movie is this, is totally different movie logo. So I did not count this as usage of Trajan. Same thing here, but your way around. This is a French adaptation, but the original movie is the American movie, also not Trajan. So I did not count this one. Other problems were, for example, the DVD covers I mentioned earlier. They are often done in Trajan, but the original movie, again, did not use Trajan. So all these were dismissed. So I can already announce that I found 400 posters over 20 years, but these are 400 unique usages. So if you would count everything, I think it must double, triple the amount of posters where Trajan was used. The second thing I wanted is Trajan would be the main typeface for the movie logo. Because at some point I noticed that Trajan started to become this default typeface also to put the names of actors and the tagline of the movie. Like, for example, this Texas Chainsaw Massacre again. The actual movie logo is not Trajan, but underneath the tagline it is Trajan. So I did not count those. So again, the number would be much, much higher. And last and quite important, each film only counts one, because now movies are promoted with like whole big campaigns with many, many posters. So, for example, for Wolfman, you've got the main poster, then character posters, teaser posters and everything. But I just said like one movie, one usage. And for example, here with Wolfman, half of the posters were done in Trajan on the left, and half of them were in some British 19th century serif typeface. So there I didn't know which was the original one, so sometimes I had to guess. So some of them I said yes, some of them I said no. So let's go back to the first usage, 1991. There's one poster using Trajan. In 1992, there's four. 1993, only three. I have to go back one. I want you to look at the bottom poster, Scent of a Woman. It's going to be quite important in the rest of my story. 1992. So 1993, not that much happening. And then suddenly there's an explosion. Suddenly there's lots and lots of posters using Trajan. And I like to call that... Oh, first, this is a graph. So that's a total of 400 posters. And the Trajan effect happens here, because what happens, Scent of a Woman gets a lot of Oscars, And I was discussing this talk a couple of months ago with Corey Holmes. That's a graphic designer. He designed the Sopranos logo and stuff like that. He does a lot of movie work. And he said, actually, you should call your talk The First to Be Second. And that's a recurring theme in Hollywood. Like, they do not want to be out there and be innovators. They just want to observe, see what works well, and then co-opt this new language, this new typeface, this whatever they think is interesting. So it totally makes sense that they might have thought, all right, this one movie was Oscar material and it had Trajan on its poster, so why not use the same device and also start using Trajan on our posters? So you see, from 1993 on, it goes up. And there are certain aspects to the popularity of fonts that can be found as well here in this graph. For example, I'm not going to go into details, but fonts, they have changed, the format changed in 2000 to a new format that you could compare it to. The previous format was like VHS tapes, and now the new format is like Blu-ray DVD, so many more options, much more fidelity and everything. So that was the first jump. So the character set was expanded to include more languages, more options and everything. So basically the typeface became a lot better. So you see this first jump. And then, which is also really important, and it's quite obvious, because Adobe mainly publishes these graphic design programs, Illustrator, Photoshop, InDesign. They also ship those programs with typefaces included. In the first Adobe CS2, there was Trajan was included for free in a couple of these programs, and in CS3 and even more. So it makes sense, because the typeface is there. People do not have to purchase it anymore. They do purchase it with the purchase price of the software, but it's there. So it makes total sense that people will use it more, because it's just available, simply. And as I said before, so Trajan crosses all genres. So, for example, these are really the inspirational movies. These are really the Oscar material movies, the sprawling epics, people overcoming bad times and doing magnificent things. There's also more the historical movies, the custom pieces, and so on. Then the war movies, again, the really epic material, all using Trajan. There's only a selection. I mean, I found 400, so I can't show them all. It would make for a very long presentation. And then here, more like romantic, historic, epic, whatever, which also spawned a subgenre, which was the floating heads. And the floating heads is a very specific genre where it is like literally heads floating in the air. It's a nice way to introduce the cast, is just to attract the audience with star power. And actually, there is a documentary online with the inventor of that style, who just explains how he came up with that specific style. Do we hear it? No, okay.
Best known for the signature style of the...
We checked the sound, though. Try again.
I design movie posters. And if you've been in a movie theater lobby in the past 15 years, you've probably seen my work. I am best known for the signature style of the floating head. Every poster presents a different challenge. You know, how big do I make the head? What shade of autumnal light should the heads be bathed in? You know, should it be brownish light or a golden light or sort of a brownish golden light? By far, my favorite head to float is Mr. Morgan Freeman. Now, he has a graceful, dignified quality to his floating head. But the minute that you show the rest of his body, that quality is lost. The only head as perfect as Morgan Freeman is Ashley Judd's head. So if you can get Ashley Judd and Morgan Freeman's head floating together, God help you. Sometimes the studio will force me to go with just one big head on the poster. But for me, two heads is better. And three heads is probably the best. And a lot of people will ask me how many heads is too many. And I'll say, the more heads, the better. I designed a poster for Traffic that had five heads in it. And a lot of people said that was too many heads. But then years later, I designed a poster for the studios that they didn't use. It was for Crash. And it had 17 heads, one for every major character in that film. For Seabiscuit, the studio said, just put Tobey Maguire's head on there. And I was like, no, this film is about a horse. And they were like, well, all right, why don't we just show the whole horse? And I was like, no, just the head. So if the film is about a really bad guy, I like to make that really bad guy's head really big and then put the person that he's chasing really tiny in the foreground. It's important to make the more famous head slightly bigger than the less famous head. But you know you've made it when your head's gotten a little bit bigger. So today I'll be working on a poster for Righteous Kill, which is starring Al Pacino and Robert De Niro. And I'm pretty sure I'm going to go with the floating heads. But once the inspiration hits me, I am unstoppable. Creating these posters is a long and painstaking process. It can take up to 2 years from start to finish. And sometimes they'll have to delay the release of the film so I can finish the poster. But they know a floating head poster equals box office gold. This has been a lot of fun. Can we cut? Oh, Gavin. You did it. I'm sorry. Can we cut?
Okay. So, to go back to our floating heads, there's even a sub-style where the floating heads are above a beach with people, which, is not often good. It's often people die or get really ill or whatever. But there's something else happening as well, and this is also one of the mechanics of Hollywood posters which really intrigued me because it doesn't make any sense. And it all has to do with contracts, with fame, and what the agents ask of the designers. If you look at the poster to the right, there is something weird happening. Because when you look at the names of the actors, you see that they have been inverted. Here as well, Dustin Hoffman looks like Robert De Niro, and the other way around. So it all has to do with fame. Like the most important actor, his name or her name has to be on the left because we read left to right, but sometimes the image on the poster is the other way around and they do not think of adapting it. It was what I call the confused actor syndrome. So here again as well, Kevin Spacey and Jeff Bridges were flipped. Here Ashley Judd is a mature African-American guy, and Morgan Freeman is a young Caucasian woman. And I recently came across really a piece of work, because when you analyze the movie poster, here's Colin Firth, here's Ellen Burstyn, and you're looking for Patricia, oh, there she is, and Amber, Tamlin's there, and Orlando Bloom is there. So you can understand that sometimes it gets a little bit confusing. So to go on, we've seen that all these like inspirational, epic, and other movies use Trajan, but also other movies. And we see that with the passing of years, it starts to slip a bit because they're still the very the detective movies, like the Whodunit or similar things, more the adventure movies, science fiction, but then also like the more, the dystopian future science fiction movies, more thrillers. And then recently, more and more, you've got these horror movies and even outright gore. And the very last category is these movies that aim to be better than what they actually are. So these are straight to DVDs, and they want to look inspirational, but actually it's just like junk that goes that doesn't even come into the theaters. And this, of course, this can be understood because originally Trajan was selected because of its specific qualities, but then it became the default. Like you have Arial on your computer, you just use it because that's what shows up first. And here as well, people just know Trajan is this movie poster staple, and so they use that one because everybody does, and they do not really think about it anymore in conscious terms. It's more a subconscious, it's not even a real choice anymore, it's just a default. And if you look at it in some kind of, it's not really graph, but with 5-year jumps, you see here it's still quite even. There's nothing in the horror or gore genre, more like inspirational and comedy and everything. It stays there for a little while. Already there's some horror and gore in 2000. 2005, suddenly you see that in the bottom, like the more low end, literally, there's more movie posters. And at the top, like half of them are already not really the big productions anymore, but more like the straight-to-video things. And 2005, sorry, in 2010, you see that the top, there is, except maybe for this one Darwin movie, like it's all like straight-to-DVD, and at the bottom, it's really the horror and the gore and the thriller and suspense. So the typeface is actually tumbling down, and it's becoming less prestigious. Now, as we said, Oscar material. Let's check at the Oscars what Trajan has done. And apparently not that much. So it has been said it's Oscar material, but except for 2002, all the yellow dots are nominations, all the four red circles are actual Oscars, so it's more a myth than anything else. What this happened, though, is that after a while, the Academy caught on and they realized, oh man, this is our typeface. So for their announcements, then they started using it 2006 and 2008, so that like 15 years late, but they still got the message, so, all right, we better use it ourselves now. And now there's something changing. Because there's a new typeface that's coming to take over from Trajan. Already heard the name from a couple of people. It's Gotham, of course. And we can see in 2006, we have two movie posters that use Gotham. There's none in 2007. 2008 again, two. And then suddenly, poo, it explodes. Now, can anybody tell me what the effect could be? Yeah. And this is unique, I think, in the history of graphic design and typography, is that a political event influenced the usage of type and usage of in graphic design language. So because of these posters by Shepard Fairey, the iconic posters Hope and Change, and the fact that the Obama campaign used this single typeface over and over again, it got connected again with this feeling of inspirational, epic, and everything, like this achievement. So Hollywood again caught on, they recognized it, they realized what they had going, and they started using Gotham. And indeed, now you see like more and more movie posters use Gotham as a typeface to like instill hope and epicness and whatever in these movies that they want to advertise. Now, what's really important is that Gotham has not been out very long. As you saw, it just restarted happening for real in 2008. And already what happened with Trajan over 20 years is now happening at a very accelerated rate for Gotham, because it's now used both for the quality movies and also for really the worst of the worst, the straight-to-DVD. So this whole evolution is very compact and much more accelerated, but exactly the same as what happened 20 years ago for Trajan. It's very interesting. It's a bit early, of course, to like assess is it going to stay on that same course. But what does happen is that it's also already become now, in only 2 years' time, it has become also the standard typeface for movie posters. Because what you can see here now is at the left bottom, it's the official movie logo, which is designed not in Gotham, but in Avenir. And it looks very, very much like Gotham, which is the actors' names and the tagline, "This is crazy." And one would think, why on earth would a graphic designer use two different typefaces on one poster that looks so much alike that it almost takes an expert to see that these are two different typefaces? It's the same thing, the same mechanics as what happened with Trajan. It has become the default, the standard. So it has evolved from being a conscious choice to convey a certain feeling, a certain atmosphere, to just being there because it is the typeface that everyone else uses. It has become the Helvetica, the Arial of the movie posters. So it has already reached that status in only like 2 or 3 years' time, which is quite astounding. But then again, if we watch at the Oscars already, we have in the last, the 2011 Oscars, we had one with Trajan and two with Gotham. So these are nominations for Best Movie. So I don't know if this will evolve in a similar way, but when it comes to Oscars, again, nothing much is happening right now. But fortunately, the Academy was much quicker on their feet and they already adopted it on their own posters. That's the end of my story. Thank you.